Cliff Richard and the Drifters with Move It on KUTX, chosen by our guest for this hour, BP Fallon. And that is the first record that turned him on to rock and roll. Where were you growing up when you heard that record?
Well, I was, I've had a very sort of strange growing upness. I was born in Dublin and then largely brought up in Germany. My father, God bless him, was in the army, so we were very nomadic. And then I went to school in England while going to holiday in Ireland. So it was all a bit confusing, really. So you maybe understand why I am like I am now, you know.
It only begins to explain it, BP. We'll unfold it this hour, a little bit at a time.
Can I just talk about Cliff for a minute there?
Please.
Cliff Richard, you know. When I heard that record, of course, you know, I checked out Elvis again. You know, up to then, I thought Elvis was this sort of greasy, sort of primal truck driver, which then I discovered, of course, was the whole point of it, you know. We're not talking Albert Einstein here, but we're talking about something equally moving and equally important, not only musically, but socially. Albert's music was cool too. but on Cliff's first album, for instance, he did My Babe, which is, you know, which he'd gotten from Ricky Nelson. And I wanted to find out where did Ricky Nelson get it, you know. So that led me to Little Walter and Chess Records and Howling Wolf and Bo Diddley and, you know, the whole schmoozle through Cliff. Thank you, Cliff.
Thank you, Cliff. And for myself, the first time I ever saw BP Fallon, I didn't know who he was. It was in the video for John and Yoko's Instant Karma, and BP was in the video appearing to play bass. By the way, today is the anniversary of John and Yoko's anniversary, so congratulations to Yoko. So there you are in this video for Instant Karma. This is, how old are you at this point? 20?
21 or 20 or something.
You had interviewed John and Yoko at the Bed-In?
Yes, in Amsterdam. I didn't mean to go there, but I went there. You know, I was in Apple Records because the previous night, my dear friend Henry McCulloch had invited me round to a Joe Cocker session at, I forget the name of the studio, a really famous studio. It was amazing. You know, Steve Winwood was playing on it and Jimmy Page and Chris Staint and Mike Kelly. They were doing, she came in through the bathroom window, you know, before it had come out by the Fabs. And Denny Cordell, God bless him, was the producer, and the engineer was Tony Visconti, who, of course, I worked with later on with T-Rex. Next door, George Harrison was in there producing Jackie Lomax. And so I wandered in, you know, and was made very welcome. And the next day I was at Apple getting photographs of George and Jackie for the article I was going to write, you know. And Tony Meehan, who was the drummer, or had been the drummer in the Shadows, and this band White Trash, who he looked after, were looking through all the tabloids. There was pictures of John and Yoko in Amsterdam at the Bed-In, at the Hilton. And they said, oh, we're going over there. And I heard this voice saying, so am I, which was me. So I thought I'd better do it then. So I hitchhiked over and arrived. And John Lennon, please, I'm from Ireland to talk to you. Can you come up now? That's how we kind of met.
And did he invite you to be in the video for Instant Karma?
Yeah. I was in the dressing room, we were hanging out, having a chin wag, as one does. And the call came for the Plastic Ono Band and John to go and film their first thing. So he sort of leant over me and said, are you getting up? You know, like asking a drunk asking a girl to dance in Liverpool, you know, are you getting up? And I said, what do you mean? He said, the Plastic Ono Band is everyone. So I banged a tambourine, you know, and I was standing by his shoulder. In my excitement, his microphone was live. The rest was miming, lip syncing. The mic was live, so I quite possibly put him out of time and all of that. It must have been really annoying, but he didn't say anything.
And actually, this was for Top of the Pops, wasn't it?
It's Top of the Pops.
So this was actually live national television.
That sort of thing. And then we did another one, though, and I just thought, you know, it might be better if sonically I was inaudible. So I borrowed a bass guitar and Klaus and myself practiced some shadow steps. Of course, as soon as the record started, I completely forgot to do them. But that, you know, that sort of follows me around the Plastic Ono Band adventure. And I'm not inured to these things. I do think it's quite incredible. I really do. You know, nothing has to do with me, but just to be there and be asked to do it and have that on my CV, Dr. Winston Obugi and Mr. Fake the Bass. He went on radio and he said, you know, BP Fallon on playing bass, you know, with me is, it's like concept art. you know. So I suppose I'm an artist conceptual. There we go. Instant karma's gonna get you. Gonna knock you right on the head. You better get yourself together. Pretty soon you're gonna be dead.
Together, darling. Join the human race.
On this first day of spring, a sunshiny day at that, Shining On with John Lennon on KUTX, our guest BP Fallon joining myself and David Frick for this South by wrap-up show, and BP just telling us the story of how he wound up playing on Top of the Pops with John Lennon, miming the bass for the video of that song, which exists to that day. There's two versions.
Two versions, yeah, tambourine and bass.
And on this, John and Yoko's anniversary of their anniversary, so it seemed perfect. Then you were just miming the bass, playing the tambourine, as you said, perhaps out of time. But these days, you are musically your own man. And you played on St. Paddy's Day how many shows? Three?
Well, altogether. I mean, this afternoon we're playing at my friend Jimmy Quill and Harper Quill's ranch, Red Horse Ranch, where we also record. They have a fantastic recording studio. And then we're playing at the Townsend later on. And altogether, we'll have played 11 shows. And people go, oh, don't you get exhausted? No, I get adrenalized. I get, you know, really high on it, actually. And all the band do. It's really a great privilege to be allowed to make noise in front of people.
Well, we're going to play some of BP's music later this hour. But right now, we're just kind of weaving our way through his rock and roll. He was almost a rock and roll zealot, just going through all of these places and being with John Lennon and having his interest in music kicked off by Cliff Richard. And then the word publicist has been applied to you, and I don't know if you're comfortable with that title for your work with Mark Bolan. Is that an accurate title for what you did with Mark?
I think paid liar or something like that, you know. No, basically the whole gig and all of that, you know, which I'm told I've done successfully with a few combos. You get paid a fortune to tell people about people that not only their music that you like, but who you love as people. And you have a fantastic time and you have a great view of proceedings in great luxury. It's almost like a scam, really. Do you know? Because, you know, up to, well, even what I'm doing now, like you, Jody, and David, we're propagators of what we love. You know, we're sort of preaching the message of rock and roll and, you know, peace if one likes, which I do, and all of that, you know. And it's a great privilege to be able to do that. And we're very lucky to be able to do that, to turn people onto things, you know, because it's a snowball.
I agree. I feel blessed. And David and I spoke of that yesterday and today, of how lucky we are. Okay.
So what was the question?
Paid liar, publicist. You mentioned other combos. You did that for Mark Bolan and T-Rex, coining T-Rex to see. We'll get to it in a little bit, but would Led Zeppelin be another of those combos that you worked for?
Yeah, some little old skiffle group that seem to have retained some sort of popularity. You know, why? Because they're incredible. You know, it something like that doesn't fade. It's not like ice on a oven.
But how did you coin T-Rextacy? Obviously, it sounds natural, but no one had thought of it before.
Because, David, if you have the word doesn't only signify what the situation is, but it actually also opens the door and makes it happen. You know, first there was the word. Beatlemania was perfect.
You made it addictive.
Well, Mark made it addictive. Mark Bolan, bless him.
But you actually gave it a handle that it gave people something to hold on to and to explain what they were feeling.
Yes, T-Rexacy. And it was T-Rexacy. It was the first thing since the Fab Four in England where people went bonkers to that degree. And even, you know, Ringo very sweetly sort of handed over the Beatle crown to Mark when he made Born to Boogie. You know,
I remember seeing that headline in Melody Maker,
T-Rextacy,
and thinking, God, that's brilliant. I wish I'd thought of that.
Yeah.
And Mark Bolan played on a David Bowie single. There's a song, The Prettiest Star, which David did on Aladdin Sane, but there was a single version that was perhaps the follow-up to Space Oddity.
It was the follow-up, and it sold about 7 copies, which I think was the mums bought them. You know, it was really commercially a failure. I mean, see, what happened until Mark and David made it, you know, David was this sort of one-hit wonder, you know, and the two of them would sit around the Gioconda coffee bar in Denmark Street waiting for the guy with the golden cigar to come in and transform everything. And they were regarded as a couple of sort of no-hopers, you know, of indeterminate anything. And that's why the whole thing was so challenging. I mean, Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, how are you going to make this fellow, you know, who's sort of Larry the Lamb sitting on the floor, you know, be perceived as a rock and roll star? Quite simple, actually, because my job doesn't involve that job in my past life. It doesn't just involve media and stuff, but it's sort of head keeping, if you like, you know. And with the records we were listening to, it was all Chuck Berry and Howlin' Wolf and everything. And it just made sense for it to go twang-a-rama and more below the belt, you know. I mean, the first time T-Rex did Top of the Pops, you know, as it was a sort of hierarchical thing. And the first time we came along and it would be early, you know, you'd have to come early. And then we weren't allowed into the, you know, the hallowed, holy BBC bar, you know, because we were sort of wafting around, you know. And Mark said, bloody hell, what do they want us to do? Drink dewdrops out of rose petals.
That actually sounds like one of his lyrics.
It probably became.
The Prettiest Star is the David Bowie single, which features Mark Bolan on lead guitar. And at the time, our guest, B.P. Fallon, was Mark Bolan's publicist or paid liar.
Well, no, I wasn't at this point.
Not yet?
No, I wasn't. This song is about, David wrote it about Mark, and Mark plays the lead guitar, The Prettiest Star, original version.
Thank you. have everything but cold fire. You will be my rest and peace, child. I moved up to take a place near you, so tired. It's the sky that makes you feel tried. It's a trick to make you see wide. It can all but break your heart in pieces. Staying back in your memory are the movies in the dark. How you move is all it takes to sing a song of when I loved the prettiest star. Sing a song of when I loved the prettiest star. One day, though it might as well be someday, you will rise up high and take us all away, all because of what you are, the prettiest star.
T-Rex to see in action on KUTX. T-Rex and Mark Bolan of T-Rex with David Bowie, both chosen by our guest, BP Fallon, who rejoins myself and David Frick in 1 minute.
Support comes from South Austin Music at 1402 South Lamar, serving musicians with friendly service, repairs, and lessons, and featuring new and used guitars, banjos, mandolins, and more. Details and inventory at southaustinmusic.com.
Attention KUTX shoppers. We interrupt this interruption to bring you a special interruption. The KUTX Spring Membership Drive starts March 29th, but if you donate now, you can get a very special thank you gift. It's called, wait for it, the Early Bird Special. Give $10 a month now and get two gifts for the price of one. KUTX's new tote bag and t-shirt, both emblazoned with Love Austin Music. But get on it, because this offer ends March 29th at midnight. See the tote and shirt and make your donation at KUTX.org. Thanks.
Support comes from One World Theater, announcing their new 2016 season, including performances by The Subdudes, Babel Gilberto, Stanley Clark, and more. Season schedule and tickets at OneWorldTheater.org.
Support for KUTX's South by Southwest 2016 coverage comes from Straight Music Company and Independence Brewing Company.
DJ, author, publicist, musician, Irishman BP Fallon is our guest this hour with myself and David Frick, and chose the last two songs that we heard. The first was David Bowie's The Prettiest Star with Mark Bolan on lead guitar. I need to be clear, that's a single version of that song, not the version that was on Aladdin Sane.
Yeah.
And then T-Rex, Their Own Bad Selves with 20th Century Boy. This connection between David Bowie and Mark Bolan, you spoke about how they were both on the outs around the time of that single, you know, a little bit down and out. Tony Visconti produced both artists.
Yes.
Is he the thread between them? How did they become...
No, they were chums already, but equally very competitive, you know. So it was quite poetic that the on the TV show Mark, which was Mark Bolan had, bless him, just, you know, he had that TV series, and David Bowie guested on the last one. And as they were singing, Mark fell off the rostrum, and, you know, and the Cameron people had to go home and have their cup of tea. So that was it. There was a freeze frame of David laughing and Mark falling. And it was kind of beautiful because Mark died a few weeks later.
At a very young age.
Too young.
Car accident, I believe 32. I'm not sure, but very young.
I think 27.
27 even. Oh, he's part of the...
I think, was he one of the 27? I don't know. One of Mark's fondest things was, you know, he was brought up in a part of London called Hackney. And that's where the Oh Boy TV show, the early English rock and roll TV show. I was just talking to David Frick about Jack Good, the producer, earlier on. And Mark used to talk about how he'd carried in Eddie Cochran's guitar into the Hackney Empire where they were filming this. And he would talk about this orange sort of makeup that Eddie Cochran had, you know.
Mark Bolan was 29 years old when he passed away in 1977. 29. And... you're working with Mark Bolan as his publicist. How long did that go on for you, approximately?
3 years. But I mean, when I left because I sort of had achieved what I wanted to do and I wanted to do something else. It wasn't that we stopped being friends or anything. There's a song called 21st Century Stance that Mark had, you know, we were up at his house and he said, you know, it's the day Elvis died or the day after. I'm glad I didn't die today. I wouldn't have made the headlines. And he was playing this sort of Dion song, and I said, why didn't you go like this and do-do-do? And so we wrote this song together, 21st Century Stance. And then he got the headlines shortly afterwards. Maria Callas died the same day and got in the corner.
Literally 1 month after. Elvis died August 16th, 1977, and Mr. Bolan, September 16th. Was your next move to work with Led Zeppelin after you... relinquish the reins from T-Rex's publicity department?
No, I went to work with this incredible band, Silverhead, who the world at large haven't heard about.
I have that first record, and it's great.
It's fantastic. Yeah, it's fantastic.
And it's Michael DeBar.
Michael DeBar and Nigel Harrison, who plays with me, the bass player, who was subsequently with Blondie and had a band with Iggy. And I got a call from Peter Grant. Said, would I like to come around and have a chinwag with him? So I did. And went round to his office and there was all, he had all these people saying, well, I'm thinking of Led Zeppelin doing this English tour. I said, well, give us a look at the dates, you know, the dates you have, please. And he gave me all these sheets, you know. So I put him on the floor and sat down on the floor. So he had to sit down beside me, this not little gentleman physically. And the two of us were on the floor looking at the date sheet, and it was just like, okay. It was a great privilege working with that band, because they're quite an extraordinary band and very good people, you know.
To this day, I mean, Robert Plant in town this week to pay tribute to our late host of Twine Time, Paul Ray. Robert Plant in town tonight at the Moody Theater, and tomorrow night taping Austin City Limits. Was it like, there was so much, I don't want to use the word madness, but so much...
drama?
Well,
drama.
Madness, madness is not a bad word, because madness is actually not a bad thing, because if we weren't all mad, we'd all be crazy. So it's all
or
right.
Or we'd be boring.
You know, all boring, you know.
But in the eye of the hurricane of Led Zeppelin, to those of us, there was all this craziness going on around them. I see pictures of you on the airplane with the band. It seems somewhat normal and... in relative terms.
Well, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't animalistic. It was civilized, you know, and these are people who would know about books or carpets or something like that. It's not just, you know, bleh, you know.
Right.
Intelligent people, you know.
And you chose a song to play by Led Zeppelin called Boogie with Stu, which is a takeoff, really, on a Ritchie Valens song.
Yeah, Ritchie Valens.
And in the title is a nod to the late Ian Stewart, who's on piano, and I believe recorded on Ronnie Lane's mobile studios,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken. So there's a lot of many threads intertwined there. You could have chosen any Led Zeppelin song. Why this one?
Because I love this album, Physical Graffiti. I have some of my pictures are on the in the little windows, actually. I was down at Plumpton House, where Jimmy lived at the time, this incredible place with a moat and black swans in it. And he sort of woke me in the mid-afternoon, a bit early, really. And he wanted to play me these tracks. He has had all these tracks left over, you know, sort of, they didn't know what to do with them. One was sort of something about going down the river, and I was thinking of Neil Young and Crazy Horse, you know. And the last thing I wanted to do at that point in time was hear anything. And I was sitting there wounded, you know, as this volume was getting louder and louder. And he's going, what do you think? Poking me, kind of thing. And I just thought, you know, that so many people would absolutely adore to be where I am right now, but I do not want it. It's too premature in the hubble bubble of coming to the surface in the new evening. And this was one of the songs. And I think it's a marvelous song because Ian Stewart, who was the piano player with the Stones, you know, and sometimes shared the stage with our mutual friend Matt, God bless him. It's interesting that the best record he made was with Led Zeppelin. And I just think the joy of this record and Jimmy twanging away on the old thingy, I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. It's not high tech or anything. It's just heart and soul and hello, Ritchie Valens.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin, Boogie with Stu from Physical Graffiti, and The Golden God is in Austin tonight and tomorrow night. Robert Plant at ACL Live at the Moody Theater. We're reminiscing with journalist, DJ, musician, man about town, Mr. B.P. Fallon, who worked with Led Zeppelin for years as their publicist and chose that song, Boogie with Stu. About how many years did you spend with Led Zeppelin?
On and off, 7.
Wow.
Yeah. The last thing I did with them was the Nebworth concert. It was interesting, you know, supported by Keith Richards and Ronnie Wood, you know.
It was the New Barbarians.
The New
band.
Barbarians, yeah. with Ian McLagan, the ubiquitous, and Bobby Keys, bless him.
Have you ever written a book?
No. I have, actually. I've written 3 books. I wrote a book on my escapades with U2, because I joined them for a year on the Zoo TV tour. I was my credentials said guru, viber, and DJ. I can explain the third one. The first two I can't.
I can explain it because that's where we met in Stockholm.
Yes, we did.
And I remember I had just gotten in that day, and I guess it was an off day before the show, and they had a big dinner at a restaurant in one of the islands in Stockholm Harbor. So there was a boat ride to go out to the dinner, and he was manning the decks, and he was playing nothing but ABBA. I thought, man, this guy is the guru and the vibe master. This is beyond DJ. This is on some other plane.
Some other planet. David Frick was wearing a very sporting Birds t-shirt. So I immediately thought, this guy's all right then. I think it was Fifth Dimension, wasn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
So you have written a book about your escapades with U2, and you said there's 2 others?
Yeah, there was this boy band in Ireland called Boyzone. And to cut a long story short, they said, would I do a book on them? It meant going on the road and taking pictures and writing about it. And it's not my cup of tea musically or anything. And I said, where? And they said, Southeast Asia. I said, like, where? Oh, you know. Hong Kong and Hong Kong and the Philippines and India and Singapore and da-da-da. So I did it and made a fortune. And then I did another one. And some people said, oh, B.P. Fallon, you shouldn't be, you know, you rock and roller, you sold out, you traitor, you're writing about a boy band and all that. They were really nice people, not, as I say, music to my cup of water, cup of tea, and I never had to pretend that it was, you know, and I had complete artistic control. And I kind of liked the fact that this annoyed some people, because it's like, what's the point if you can't do whatever you want, you know? I mean, we're brought up, and, you know, I mean, I was, you know, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not, to how you conduct your life, you know. My one is much more simple. It's do anything you want to do, but don't hurt anyone. And that's what I was doing, is having fun and making money and seeing some incredible parts of the world.
Which I'm so glad you still do to this day.
I also think that in 1963, the Beatles were a boy band. People tend to forget that.
They were a boy band, but they were. I mean, no disrespect to Justin Bieber and people like that. They did have a whole other boogaloo going.
But the mania and just the excitement that they created amongst young women, guys, you know, that's something that great pop music does on every level.
Mania is a wonderful thing. You know, mania is wonderful when, you know, all the girls are going crazy and the guys are going crazy and the excitement of it. And one of the beautiful things about pop music, as pop music, is that it's not thought out and cerebral. It's completely emotive and emotional and sometimes animalistic. And that's the beauty of it. Do you know, when they refused to show Elvis on the Ed Sullivan Show from the waist down, they did Elvis a great favor because people were imagining that there's like a python down there or something. You know,
it's what you can't see that scares the hell out of you.
That kind of thing. And what you want, you know.
Well, there's no one with greater rock and roll credentials than Johnny Thunders, late of the New York Dolls. And you manage Johnny Thunders, and, you know, you can't put your arms around a memory, but we should try for a moment and talk about Johnny.
That's a beautiful song. Have you heard Ronnie Spector's version that Joey Ramone produced?
That's a great, great track.
Beautiful, isn't it? Daniel Ray and all of that.
It just shows what a great writer Johnny was, with all of the other stuff around his life story, the stuff he wrote for the Dolls, that song, that solo record. You know, there was so much there that just kind of got derailed, but, you know, in the derailing, he got a lot of really special work done.
No, I mean, I've worked with some incredibly, I've been very blessed. I've worked with some incredibly talented people, and I still am now, people who are making music with me. You know, Johnny Thunders is, to me, one of the greatest rock and rollers of all time. He had the stance. He had the guitar playing. You'd always know it was Johnny.
He had the hair.
You know, he had the hair. Thanks, David. He had the hair. He had, you know, great songs and attitude. Attitude is the main thing, you know, really. Just going forth and just doing it, you know. Can I just, no, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. One of my roles, the managing Johnny on the Johnny Thunders thing, forgive me for being so impolite, Jody, you know, bringing in other musicians. You know, now Steve and Paul from the Sex Pistols were already chums and stuff. And Chrissy Hynde, who had been this girl writing for the NME, you know. And but I brought in people like Chris Wood from Traffic and this incredible Irish saxophone player, Irish John Earl. On this record we're about to hear, I brought in Phil Lynott, who played on a lot of the records subsequently, from Thin Lizzy, and Steve Marriott, who, you know, is one of the most incredibly talented people I ever worked with, because Steve could sing like a demon. He could sing folky, he could sing black, he could do anything, he could play any instrument. He could write these incredible songs. He had this wonderful partnership with Ronnie Lane, bless him. The Small Faces were one of the best groups ever, ever, ever. Steve was a handful sometimes.
Well, actually, this list of people that you've just mentioned sounds like the Politburo of Trouble. You know, Steve Marriott, Phil from the Lizzy, the Sex Pistols, Johnny. Like, it's like herding wild dogs. Well, like, how do you manage a session like that?
It's a very good question. Steve Lillywhite produced this album, So Alone, which Johnny kindly always said he thought was his best record. And Steve produced it and I kind of directed it, you know. So on this track here, as I say, I brought in Steve Marriott and Phil Lynott, and Steve and Paul from the Sex Pistols are already there. And this is Daddy Rolling Stone, and it's fantastic. First Steve sings the verse, and then Johnny, then Phil, and then Steve Marriott comes along playing the piano and the harmonica, and it's just something else. It's rock and roll.
Oh,
I actually played that harmonica that Steve Marriott is playing there. I played on another track on that's from the So Alone album. There's another track which is on the reissue and all of that. And actually, Remarkable Records have just put out a fantastic double version vinyl of this record, So Alone. I played harmonica on The Wizard, which is the Mark Boland song, you know.
That was incredible. Daddy Rolling Stone, chosen for us by B.P. Fallon with Johnny Thunders. It's from Johnny's album, So Alone, who B.P. managed at one point. Joined by Steve Marriott of the Small Faces and later Humble Pie. And you pronounced Phil's name the correct way. Phil...
Linnett, I say.
Linnett from Thin Lizzy.
But I mean, he used to change it too, you know.
Okay. So. Well, but being that you're from Ireland and he was, I figure I'm going with what you say.
Okay.
Phil Linnett. Daddy Rolling Stone. B.P. Fallon here with David Frick. And we've been tracing through just a touch of BP's wonderful rock and roll life with John Lennon, the Plastic Ono Band, David Bowie, Mark Bolan, Led Zeppelin, Johnny Thunders. And we started with Cliff Richard, which you said was the guy that kicked it off for you before he kind of moved to the middle of the road. But I've always noticed that your email address has Elvis's name in it.
Yes.
And... so Elvis was important to you as well.
Oh, Elvis is, you know, the god. I mean, when Elvis died, it was, you know, it was extraordinary because Elvis, you know, didn't come into the picture at all, you know. And then when Albert Goldman did that horrible scurrilous book about Elvis in his nappies and being incontinent and all of this sort of stuff, it was shocking. It really was shocking. And then that Albert Goldman, who wouldn't be my Top of the Pops fave rave writer, then did one on John Lennon, and you know, and it said all these things about John Lennon, that he's a womanizer, he was a junkie and all that. And no one cared, because one of the wonderful things about John Lennon, we knew he was fallible. That's why we loved him so much, you know, as well as being talented, of course. Whereas Elvis was this deity, you know, and suddenly, oh my God.
Unbelievable. Elvis, and all of these things not only led BP into a life of working with music, but then making music. Somehow you made it to Nashville and Jack White wanted you to make a record. What's the story there?
I was in a club in New York and Jack White came up to me and he said, you know, would you like to come down to Nashville and make a record for my label Third Man Records? And I said, yes. And then my second question, you know, then I said, I should have really been my question to him, what do you have in mind? And he said, anything. And then unlike a lot of talk, it came to be, and I went down there, you know, and I did a spoken word thing, and then he was talking to me on the Foldback, you know, which became B.P. Fallon interviewed by Jack White. I didn't realize, you know, he probably didn't either. And then he said, well, what do you want to do? And I had this song that I'd written, and Aaron Lee Tashin, who subsequently plays with me, had written the riff, and you know, Jack White say, who's got a anyone got a thingamajig?
Slide?
Slide, yeah. And then he's on the phone. Can you come round and play? And we cut it live. That's fantastic, you know.
Well, you should see B.P. Fallon play. And in fact, you have a chance tonight. He's done, I think, a total of 11 gigs by the time South By is over. But tonight, 9 o'clock at the Townsend, B.P. Fallon is playing. And I've seen you play several times. And you often will do a spoken word thing. Would it be possible for you to do a little bit right now?
I'd love to. I'll do the a spoken word of the song that I recorded with Mr. White. That it changed my whole life, man. Because what happened was, you know, I was in Dublin and I was coming out here to be a superstar DJ, and you know, I thought to myself, there's all these bands there in South by Southwest who would give their granny to have what I have at this point in time, which is a record on one of the coolest record labels, Third Man Records, produced by one of the coolest guys in rock and roll, Jack White, who plays this sexy, you know, slide guitar on it, who did the artwork. I should have a band. So I made three phone calls. I rang Nigel Harrison in New York, who'd been the bass player in Blondie. I rang Aaron Lee Tashin in New York, who's this extraordinary guitar player, and he has a fantastic new album out called In the Blazes right now as a songwriter. And I rang Clem Burke in LA, who's the drummer with Blondie, and they all said yes. And then I sat in Dublin and I went, God, what have I done now? I'm the singer in the band, you know. So that's kind of how that started. But this is a verbal of the first on the record, Third Man Records, TMR 022. I believe in Elvis Presley. I believe in Jerry Lee. I believe in John Lennon. I believe in you and me. I believe in Lewis Carroll. I believe in Oscar Wilde. I believe in Muddy Waters. I believe in Jackson 5. I believe in Charlie Chaplin. I believe in MLK. I believe in what is happening. I believe in come what may. I'm not against a little darkness. I'm not against a little sin, as long as no one gets hurt or lets the devil in. So maybe he came to the crossroads, or maybe it's a racist lie, saying no black man could be so brilliant without the devil getting his soul when he dies. Robert Johnson. I believe in vinyl records. I believe in MP3. I believe in Tutti Frutti. I believe in you and me. I believe in psychedelics. I believe in LSD. I believe in marijuana. I believe in you and me. These are times when it feels we live in fiction, and what we've got between us is several truths apart, and all we've got to go by is our worshipping of icons and God, or is it Elvis singing, "How Great Thou Art"? I believe in Elvis Presley. I believe in Jerry Lee. I believe in being here right now. I believe in you and me.
B.P. Fallon, I Believe in Elvis Presley. The lyrics spoken for you from the single on Jack White's label. B.P. Fallon is playing the Townsend tonight. We're running tight on time, so I want to get to a song or two of yours, B.P. I love this song called The War to Fight for Love. And tell me a bit about it, because isn't Ian McLagan on this song?
Yes, Ian McLagan graces us with the Hammond organ on this track. He came out to Red Horse Ranch and played with us when we were recording there. That's such an honor. I mean, we've been friends for years and years and years. He used to say, I know B.P. Fallon before he had a hat, you know. Beautiful man, you know, walking effervescence. So talented and such a light. And I miss him. I really do miss him. You know, we're both little geezers as well. And this is a version of the song that's from the fab new B.P. Fallon Waxing, which I'll tell you about afterwards. But this is a mix by Paul Kostabi and Aaron Lee Tajan. B.P. Fallon and the Bandits, featuring Ian McLagan on the organ, The War to Fight for Love.
Significance. Dreams are our wishes, the loaves and the fishes. Let our dreams be crushed by apparent reality. Let us harvest our